Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I think the landscape of the market has changed. I think everyone realizes that it will be really volatile. And so everyone kind of takes a 10,000 foot view this time of year and really starts to lock in over the course of the next, you know, 5 to 10 days. So I think everyone's wise to the fact that there's nothing that's really certain right now. And in order to get a deal done, you would have to overpay significantly. And so for the most part right now, it's trying to figure out who's available, trying to figure out generally what their cost is, and then everyone sets their thresholds, and when people are ready to strike, they strike.
It's Cubs GM Carter Hawkins with myself and Layla Rahimi on the Rahimi and Harris Show, Friday, live from Gallagher Way. Third and final hour of the Score Evening Show, live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And joining me now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. He covers the Cubs for The Athletic, also the co-host of the Northside Territory podcast. Pleasure to welcome in Sadiv Sharma. Sadiv, how are you this evening, my man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Hot day at the ballpark. I assume you were out there today, huh?
Yeah. I that was a tough one to sit through. I'm sure it was a tough one to play through as well.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, I was sitting at home in the air conditioning, but still a tough one to sit through with the 8-4 loss. And the bullpen wasn't terrible today. It was really just a two-run homer from Drew Pomeranz. But here, 3 out of the last 4 days, we've seen this bullpen falter just a little bit after it's been so good all season. How concerning is that in your eyes, as volatile and as fragile as bullpens can be?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of the reality of who those bullpen arms are. I think there are some pretty trustworthy guys in there, you know, Palencia, Keller, Thielbar. Those guys don't look too shaky to me, especially Keller after the break. He got that reset. He was shaky before the break. So those three, I think, look really good. Brazier has looked fine. At the others, you know, they were probably pitching above their heads for a while. It felt inevitable that some of these guys were going to have hiccups. I think it just kind of emphasizes. I think it's almost a, you know, you don't want to lose games. You don't want them to cost you games, but it's almost a good thing to see, okay, there was a little bit of fool's gold. I don't think this is a bad bullpen. I don't think it's a problem. I do think that it's becoming clearer and clearer that they need to add one more arm, whether it's a guy that can compete with Palencia for closing or just handle the seventh inning and be super trustworthy. You need someone that can handle those moments. Just one more arm to feel a little bit more comfortable. I wouldn't be overly worried with just a couple games. It's just more about the reality that you always need depth in that area.
You know, I was talking before I brought you on, and part of what is sort of, I don't know, changed or skewed the way I was looking at the Cubs before the trade deadline is reading you and Patrick Mooney's work at The Athletic. And I do want to get into starting pitching and the third base situation and all that. But I think maybe in my mind, the bullpen, a little relief help, maybe the biggest need for this Cubs team. Am I off base with that, do you think?
I think starter is still the biggest need. I think what Colin Ray's done has been really impressive. He's handled the job really well. I think it'd be nice if you could push him to the bullpen, but the reality is they don't even, right now, they need someone other than, they need to keep Colin Ray in there because there's a fifth spot that isn't True. Being filled. Ben Brown has not been doing well enough. Jordan Wicks isn't going to fill that spot. Chris Flexen isn't going to fill that spot. They're going to go bullpen games. I think that can hurt the bullpen as well by going on those bullpen games, kind of taxing those arms. I think they have to add a rotation piece and someone that you can feel pretty good about possibly making a playoff start, if not a slam dunk playoff starter. They really need to do that. And ideally, it's someone that's on the payroll beyond this season, kind of take care of a free agent need right now. I think that would be the ideal scenario for them.
And I was kind of going on the assumption that, that there is on the horizon returns from Tyone and maybe Javier Assad to that that rotation at one point this season. But one of the things I was pointing to, and I agree, like adding an arm to the rotation is, it, I would list it as a need, and certainly, but a lot of people saying that they need to go and get a number one starter. They need to go and get an ace. But Sada, they have two guys. I don't know if people have noticed. They have two guys that are pitching like number one starters and aces right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, Shota and Boyd have been studs. Now that Shota's healthy, you really do have a nice 1-2 punch. I don't think you can give Matthew Boyd enough credit for what he's done. He's been super confident since spring training that his best games were ahead of him. He really believed that, and he's gone out and delivered. You got to give the front office credit, but most of all, Matthew Boyd, just tremendous job. Every single time they lose a game, it seems like they hit a bump in the road. Matthew Boyd steps on the mound and makes sure they win. That's been huge. You're not seeing these long losing streaks, even when it looks like, uh-oh, is this a bad moment for them? Matthew Boyd comes out, has a brilliant start. You're right. They two really good starters. I think that's all the more reason. Get a third. Do they need a number one? Do they need a true ace? I'm not sure if that guy's even available. So right. I don't know how you do that. You know, if Joe Ryan is available, Mackenzie Gore is probably a pipe dream. I don't think Mitch Keller's a number one, but he's probably an upgrade in this rotation. The rest of those, Edward Cabrera, I really like. I think there's people in the Cubs front office that really would love to get their hands on him. All those guys are upgrades in around beyond this season, and I think those are the types of guys that you could see them give up top prospects for. Other than that, it's rentals, and, you know, they're good. They're good pitchers. I don't know if there's anyone that you look at that's a rental that says, oh, yeah, that changes the dynamic of this rotation. You can go and get a rental and help your team. I don't know if that guy, that rental's out there that really, you know, blows you away.
I don't know if it was your stat or your cohort and co-host on the Northside Territory podcast. I do remember I got it from The Athletic today, though. 42 starts Shota Imanaga has made since joining the Cubs, and the Cubs have won 32 of those. I don't put a lot of weight in wins and losses personally for pitchers and their personal win-loss record, but when you're winning three-fourths of the games that a guy takes to mound, that speaks volumes about what Shota has and how well he's performed since becoming a Chicago Cub.
Yeah, I think I agree. I'm not a big pitcher win-loss stat guy. But when you go out there and your team is consistently winning games, it means you're at least giving your team a chance to win. There's been, a handful of times that we've seen Shota really get blown up over the past year and a half. He just doesn't give up a lot of runs. He's just been tremendous, better than I think even the Cubs expected. The Cubs liked him. I don't think they expected this. And he's actually seems to be getting better as the year has gone on. I was a little concerned about the lack of strikeouts. Then the injury came, and then he came back, and he wasn't punching guys out as much. That's starting to ramp up. The splitter looks really good. I think maybe it's one of those things where you never want a guy to get injured, but it was a non-arm injury for a pitcher, and the team didn't tank. So can this help them in the long run where he doesn't have as much mileage on his arm for the season, and this is going to pay off where maybe he's playing his best baseball in September and October? You know, I don't know that that's going to happen, but these are things that they're talking about within that, that coaching staff and front office.
Talking with Sadhav Sharma, he covers the Cubs for The Athletic here on the Score Evening Show. While we're on the subject of the pitching staff, I know that they're almost forced to go with somebody who they don't have a great amount of confidence in. But how many more chances can they give Ben Brown this season while in the heat of a division race with the Brewers?
Yeah, I think it has to be short bursts. I think ultimately with him, he doesn't believe he needs a third pitch. I think the league is telling him something different. When he starts turning lineups over, they sit on a pitch. And he's throwing two, they're two good pitches. I'm not sure if they're good enough to turn over lineups multiple times. I think he's a really talented guy. I think if he develops a third pitch, he could be a really good starter. Maybe it's also a little bit of a mental game for him, and one bad moment starts to lead to him unraveling on the mound. But if it's just the third pitch thing, I do believe he can be a really good reliever, because he's got two awesome pitches. They're not just okay pitches. That breaking ball that he has is one of the best in baseball. He's got a quality fastball. The problem is if they're sitting on it, if they're just sitting on one pitch, if they've seen him multiple times, it doesn't seem to go as well. It's been pretty consistent, and you know, I don't know what more you can go on than what we're seeing on the field. I like the guy. I think he's super talented. I do think you have to have a much shorter leash with him, and the results are telling you that.
Now, outside of the pitching staff, the other position folks have talked about in terms of adding at the trade deadline is third base. Do you think Matt Shaw and another home run today, a lot of good contact since the All-Star break, do you think he's changing the way that the Cubs front office thinks about third base with just over a week before the trade deadline?
So I'll say this. They're not the most desperate team to add offense. So there are going to be teams that are going to be willing to pay more for someone like Eugenio Suarez. If Willie Castro is available, there are probably teams that are more willing to pay up than the Cubs for a third baseman. I do think they could use an upgrade of the bench. I think that is certainly something they're thinking about. I'm not sure if the Suarez move is the thing that the Cubs are going to do, just because there are teams that will pay up and are desperate for offense, while the Cubs have a really good offense. I don't know if a couple games for Matt Shaw should change the thinking, though. For me, that's hard to do. That's hard to look at, knowing this front office, knowing the way they think. I'd be surprised. I mean, just talking to Craig Counsell, I'd be surprised if he's going to suddenly say, like, oh, yeah, five games or whatever, it's been six games since the break, have changed my mind on Matt Shaw. I think it's great for him. The numbers are really nice. He's pulling the ball with authority on occasion now. He's getting a few balls to drop. He looks better. He looked better when he first came, upon his first recall after he was demoted. I thought he looked really good too, and then it went away so quickly. I think it would be risky to not make a move strictly because of Shaw. I think there's no August waiver wire trades anymore. You're just going to go with what you have after the trade deadline. So you have to make all your moves now. So I think they will be proactive. I just don't know if Suarez is the guy, because I know that's who everyone wants. And look, if they added him, that would be an amazing move, because you'd have no weakness in your lineup, especially when Miguel Amaya comes back. I don't know how you pitch that team, but I just don't – like the Yankees, I think now the Reds are interested in Suarez. There are teams – I mean, the Astros may be interested. There are so many teams out there that are more – that are going to be more aggressive, at least in theory, for someone like Suarez. I do think it'll be interesting to see how they upgrade the offense, though.
Last one for you real quick. We played the clip from Carter Hawkins with Layla and myself out at Wrigley Field on Friday, talking about the market and not a lot of sellers right now, and maybe that changes between now and the trade deadline. Do you think it will change very much? And I'm not saying become a seller's market, but a buyer's market, but maybe move a little bit more buyer friendly between now and July 31st? Or do you think most teams are holding pat where they are right now, whether they're on the buyer's side or the seller's side?
I think this past week has been really important. There are a few teams, St. Louis, obviously that doesn't impact the Cubs as much directly, but it makes more players available, which will impact their competitors, right? So maybe the team can go to the Cardinals that would be going to try and get a player that the Cubs are pursuing from another team, and they can go to the Cardinals and get a similar type player. So the Cardinals look like they may be leaning towards selling. The Twins suddenly were like aggressive, thinking they were going to buy. Now they may be selling. Maybe the Angels are selling. The Diamondbacks, I believe, have just lost three in a row after sweeping the Cardinals over the weekend. They are, that's a team I would watch. So, there are teams that have been waiting to see what this week out of the first week out of the All-Star break would look like for them. And I think it's, I think we are seeing some more sellers here. A lot of these teams didn't get the results that they wanted. And I think we're going to see a few more sellers, unless, it's not like there's been a ton of movement. I don't know if we're going to even see movement over this weekend. It may not be until Monday. So these teams may wait another series still before they make their decisions. I mean, Kansas City's kind of on the fence, and yeah, they win a series against the Cubs. That helps their decision to maybe not sell and maybe do a soft buy or something like that. But then this weekend could completely change things. So it is kind of up in the air like that. You don't want to make your decisions off one or two games, but they kind of have to with the way the playoff system is designed and the way where the trade deadline is.
That's Sahadev Sharma, catches work covering the Cubs in The Athletic. Also check out the Northside Territory podcast along with Patrick Mooney and follow him on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma. Really appreciate the time, my man. Thanks. Keep up the great work and have yourself a great night.
Appreciate it. Take care. Thanks for having me.
And he joins me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. That made me feel good, the end of that interview. I feel like it could not turn into a buyer's market, but a little bit more buyer friendly. And that's good news for the Cubs. I hope more of those teams, or those teams that he was talking about, continue to collapse down the stretch here between now and the trade deadline. I cheer for your demise, Arizona Diamondbacks, and especially the St. Louis Cardinals. We'll hit a quick break on the other side. Got to get back to some Bears talk. It's day two of camp, and one thing is making me feel really, really good. One thing, not so much. We'll talk about that right after this. It's Rami Makhlouf. It's the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
We're back, live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's me with you until 9 o'clock. We haven't talked White Sox yet today, and they also should be involved with the trade deadline. We'll get you the latest on that coming up at about 8:45 before we get out of here at 9 o'clock. But Bears camp underway. They reported yesterday, first practice today, and there's good news and there's bad news in my mind. I mean, there's plenty of good news and some bad news. Jalen Johnson hurt, not at camp. Luther Burden hurt, not at camp. But like bigger picture wise, to me, there's good news and there's bad news when it comes to this Chicago Bears team and the situation as they report to camp. I'll start with the bad, and then I'll cheer everybody up with the good. Something I like. And then something I don't like, and then something I kind of do like. I know you're not going to fix all your problems in one offseason, and if you want to talk some Bears with me, open phone lines between now and 9 o'clock, 312-644-6767. I know you're not going to fix all your problems in an offseason. I understand that. And they did a lot of things that, once again, on paper, look real good, and that I agreed with, and that I wanted them to do, starting with Ben Johnson being hired as the head coach. But I just, the fact that you came into training camp after you gave up more sacks than anybody in 2024, the fact that we're going into training camp not knowing who the left tackle is, that's pretty concerning for me. And I know they did a lot to overhaul that off. They redid the whole interior of the offensive line, upgrades across the board, and that's great. And again, I know you can't fix all the problems in one offseason, but that's one that, to me, should have been at the top of the list. Even if it meant you didn't address the entirety of the interior offensive line, to me, it was more important and bigger that you went and got somebody who you felt really good about at left tackle. And I talked with Scott Baer in the 7 o'clock hour of the show, covers the Bears for the Marquee Sports Network. And he pointed out, and Ben Johnson has pointed out, the number one job of a left tackle is pass protection. And Braxton Jones, according to the numbers, has actually been pretty good in that department. But Braxton Jones is coming off an injury, and to hear Ben Johnson tell it, we don't even know that he's the starting left tackle once the season starts.
Everyone's going to have a fair shot at this. And we're going to work him back in, and we'll see where he's at. And as part of the evaluation, you know, is to see how ready he is by week one. So by week one, we'll know exactly who our starting five are going to be. And if that takes 3 weeks to figure out, great. If that takes 6 weeks to figure out, no problem.
That would be a problem. I'm sorry, but that would be a problem in my eyes. I think that would be a problem. And look, man, maybe Ozzie Trapillo eventually is the long-term answer. Maybe Braxton Jones is good enough for now, or even beyond that, more than just for now. Maybe Kieran Amagaje is the guy that Ryan Poles thought he was when he used a third-round pick on him last year. I'm not going to write the guy off after 1 year and one really bad start in Minnesota. Minnesota did that to guys who were not making their first start in the NFL last year. That was a very good pass-rushing team. So all three of these guys, yeah, maybe the answer at left tackle, or at least the answer for now at left tackle, but more than any other position on that offensive line, I want a sure thing over there. I didn't even hate the idea of moving Darnell Wright from the right side to the left side, or at least seeing how that looked, because he's been a pretty dominant force on the right side of the line, and if he could be that on the left side, all the more valuable to you. And Caleb Williams' backside is covered. So how concerning is it to you that they don't know who the left tackle is? And who do you think it will be is the logical second part of that question. 312-644-6767. Scott Baer made a lot of sense when he said he would almost put it in as a lock. He said he'd go down to Circus Sports and put the money down today if he could, that Braxton Jones is going to be the left tackle. And I understand why he says that, because, and this goes right along with everything I've been saying up until now, he's the most sure thing at that position among the three guys that are competing for it entering training camp. But I think if it's not on day one, maybe not before long, I do believe it'll be Ozzie Trapillo's job, because I think the draft showed us that this is Ben Johnson's team, and we kind of already knew that when he was hired and the money that they spent to hire him and just the situation that he was walking into and the lack of success. You kind of have to, if you're hiring a guy that high profile, that highly sought after, that highly paid, you do hand over some of the control or some of the say in how this roster is going to be constructed. And a coach should always have some say in how a roster is going to be constructed. He's the one who's going to have to draw up the game plan and go coach those guys and get the best out of them. I don't think you're using a second-round pick on Ozzie Trapillo unless Ben Johnson thinks he's a part of this thing long-term. I'm just putting the pieces together, and to me it makes sense that a guy you used a second-round pick on in a head coach's first year, and a head coach who was paid as much as Ben Johnson was and as sought after as Ben Johnson was, it makes sense that that guy is part of the plan and the big picture, if not right away, then down the line. So I think it's Ozzie Trapillo, if not on day one, then soon. But I would like to know who it is. I'd like that there's somebody established enough or dominant enough or has a track record enough that I feel good about that position on day one. Concerning that we don't have that on Caleb Williams' blind side. Now, I said I was going to give you something good after the bad. That's the bad. We don't know who the left tackle is. There is something I've really, really liked about Ben Johnson since he got hired. And I am trying not to get carried away with my Ben Johnson love and my excitement or optimism about this football team, because we've been here before. Like, we've been excited about coaches or GMs or quarterbacks or some combination thereof, and I need wins at this point. The rest of that is empty calories. All the excitement and hype, it's empty calories. I need wins. I need sustenance. So I try not to get carried away with it. But there's one thing that I really, really liked about Ben Johnson. As introductory press conference and comments I've heard since, and he touched on it again yesterday, which is that kind of nothing is set in stone for the way that this team is going to play football. Here's Ben Johnson at his introductory press conference at training camp yesterday.
It goes back to getting to know each other. You know, in the springtime, we saturated everybody, quarterback, everybody on offense got a lot of information. We're just trying to introduce a lot of elements of the system. When you look back at it, there's probably some things that you wouldn't run against DA's defense that we just wanted to get introduced. Going into camp, it's going to be a lot here early on. These first 2 weeks, we're still going to do a lot. And it's not so much to attack the defense or anything like that. It's we got to find out who we are. And I'm going beyond just the quarterback here. I don't know if we're going to be a wide zone team up front. I don't know if we're going to be a gap team yet. There's a lot of things that got to play out, and we won't know until we get the pads on. But, yeah, it's something you're certainly conscious of is what's the right amount, not only over the course of camp, but more importantly, once we get into the season. And that's something as a staff that we're going to have to hone into.
I love that. I love that going into his first season, and now this is uncertainty on some level, and I just talked about how I don't like the uncertainty at left tackle, but I love that their scheme, their style, it's not locked in. There isn't a system that they're going to try and like crowbar guys into. They're not going to square peg through a round hole this thing, and not just with Caleb Williams, with the protection scheme, and I'm sure it goes across the board on the defensive side of the football and your skill position players. Good coaches play to their players' strengths. And I think this was a major, major flaw in the previous coaching staff's regime and in the hire of Shane Waldron. And prior to him, the hire of Luke Getsy. Those guys seem to really have a definite idea of the scheme, the style, everything. And everybody had to fall in line and do exactly what was asked of them in that scheme. And that doesn't work, man. Especially not in football and with a roster as large as an NFL roster is, you're not gonna be able to assemble a group of guys that fit perfectly or are tailor-made into what your system or scheme or whatever it is you want to call it. You're not gonna find enough guys that fit perfectly into that. And so then you start asking guys to do things that they're not good at, that aren't their strengths. And the Bears, and it's not just the Bears. This is something that happens across really the world of sports, but I feel like more in football than any other because system and scheme is so important and so much the identity of a football team and each side of the ball on a football team. These guys get stubborn and locked into this is what we do and this is how we do it and you have to be able to fit what we do. No, man, the best coaches, they're flexible and they can change things to fit what their strengths are. If you've heard me on the Score or anywhere else in my past radio career, I always come back to a quote from the Bill Belichick, A Football Life, from his assistant coaches, and it was numerous assistant coaches. This was like one of Bill Belichick's mantras. When they would get a new player, he would say, don't tell me what he can't do. Tell me what he can do. Because they're on the team. They're on the roster. And it's in our best interest to get the best out of that guy. And the best way to get the best out of that guy is to put him in a position to succeed and to ask him to do the things that he's good at. And I feel like that's a big part of Ben Johnson's philosophy across the board, not just with Caleb Williams, across the board. Ask these guys to do what they're good at. And I love that. I love that from the head coach and the guy who's going to be drawing up, designing, and calling this offense. I love that. Let's get in a quick call before the break. Let's go to the north side. And Bobby, you're on the score. What's up, Bobby? Bobby.
Hey, Bob. Guys. How you
hey,
doing?
What's up, man? Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Oh, good. I'm good, guys. First time I got on the air with you guys, so glad to have you.
Bob, can you close your window? Are you walking through a wind tunnel?
Yeah. Actually, I was going through a car wash. I'm almost done. So it's about 10 seconds left. I didn't know I was going to get on.
It's all good. It's all good. Go ahead with your Bears thoughts.
Yeah, so I just want to see the Bears hopefully dominate our own division. I mean, we've been getting our team kicked in by Detroit or Green Bay or Minnesota. It is getting, like, ridiculous. And I just want to see us at least, instead of, like, not do these dumb plays at the goal line, go in and be aggressive and, you know, and take the division.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. I think I heard him over the car wash saying he wants to win in the division and he wants to see this team be smarter and more aggressive in the red zone and on the goal line. It's a tough division, but I don't – that's not an excuse to me. Like that's your competition. That, and the point of sports is to be better than your competition. Like that's – everyone – involved with the Chicago Bears, it is their job to be better than the Packers and the Lions and the Vikings and anybody else who you might run into that gets in the way of winning a Super Bowl. Yeah, I said Super Bowl. That's the job. So when people go, I heard this so much last year when I would compare the Bears to other teams in the division. Well, yeah, but it's the best division in football. Cool. Why aren't we the best team in the best division in football? I'm just supposed to throw my hands up and go, oh, well, I guess we're in a good division. No, be better. Be best. Be best. And the point about being better in the red zone and on the goal line, yeah, that's obvious. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, we've talked plenty about the Cubs and what they might do ahead of the trade deadline, an update on what the Sox might do ahead of the trade deadline, and the Pope keeps getting gifts from Chicagoans. We'll talk about that right after this. It's Rami Makhlouf. It's the Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Pope. We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's me with you for a few more minutes, right up until 9 o'clock. What was I going to talk about here? Oh, yeah. Got a couple things to talk about here. Talked a lot about the Cubs and their potential activity ahead of the trade deadline next Thursday. Yeah, 8 days from now. That would be next Thursday. And they'll be buyers, or at least most people think they will be buyers on some level. On some level. The White Sox, on the other hand, most would expect them to be sellers, and specifically selling on Luis Robert Jr., who has a $20 million option on his contract after this season. One that most don't expect the Sox to pick up. And so a guy with, you know, some potential, some upside, maybe has a market out there on the trade deadline. And if you're not going to pick up the $20 million option, then get something for him while you can, right? Well, they could have. This comes from The Athletic, their staff, and their sort of roundup of what they're hearing ahead of the trade deadline. And two clubs made aggressive attempts last week to land Luis Robert Jr. Aggressive attempts, according to league sources, but the White Sox wanted a better return of prospects. Now, he is hot right now. Through 10 games in July, Luis Robert Jr., 12 for 33. That's good for a .364 batting average with two home runs and three stolen bases. And he's been among the league leaders in stolen bases all year, We know when he's healthy, he brings the glove, but unless the bat is special, he's not. He's just not the player that a lot of people expected him to be coming into the league. And his overall numbers for the season are a .206 batting average, a .636 OPS, and 10 home runs in 323 plate appearances. Now, I'm not saying it's never going to pan out for Luis Robert Jr. I'm not saying that the talent that we saw in this guy will never blossom. He's 27 years old, and 2 years ago, he hit 38 homers. But again, you're probably not picking up that $20 million option next year to find out if he does pan out. And right now, that's who he is. A .206 batting average, a .636 OPS, and 10 home runs in 323 plate appearances. If two teams came at you with, again, I quote, aggressive attempts last week to land Luis Robert Jr., what are you doing? What are you I assume aggressive means pretty good packages that were offered in return for Luis Robert Jr. What are you waiting for? And anybody following the situation with Luis Robert Jr. has been asking, what are you waiting for since last year's trade deadline? Then the offseason. And now this year's trade deadline, and they're still holding their nose up at offers for this guy and waiting for more. When do you think you're going to get more? And maybe the market heats up in the next week or so. But to me, two aggressive offers is enough. I'm sure I could take one of those, and if not be happy with it, I don't know that you're going to be happy with what you get for Luis Robert Jr. at this point, at least be content, satisfied with whatever you get, because you got to get something for him now unless you plan on exercising that $20 million option and gambling on either him becoming the player you thought he would be or the market getting even hotter for Luis Robert Jr. next year and somebody wanting to take whatever is left of that $20 million option that you give him when the trade deadline rolls around. But I don't think they're picking it up. So to me, turning down two aggressive offers from other teams makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But we'll see. Maybe I'm proven wrong. Maybe even better and more aggressive offers come in here in the next week. And if he continues to hit the way that he has in July, then that very well might be the case. But I'm not betting on that if I'm the Sox based on what I've seen from that dude this year. It's a bit of a prayer to think that Luis Robert Jr. will keep doing this or turn it around and his market will suddenly get much, much hotter. I don't think it will. They do have a White Sox fan in the Vatican, though. That might help. I just said it would take a prayer. And people keep showing up from Chicago and giving this dude Chicago gifts a few weeks ago. Tyler, I think you were with me on the show when somebody gave him a White Sox hat.
Yeah,
and he put it on. It was a newlywed couple visiting Rome that gave him a White Sox hat, and he put it on. Very cool moment for not just Sox fans, but Chicagoans, maybe even just Americans. It's cool that the Pope is American. Well, over the weekend, or no, I'm sorry, just a couple days ago, somebody showed up to the Vatican in Rome with and man, I've seen these, and I haven't pulled the trigger on buying one, and I regret it. Just like the White Sox might regret not trading Luis Robert Jr. The Da Pope shirts, they're in Bears colors, obviously a play on the old SNL sketch. It's D-A and then Pope, like Da Bears,
Da Bulls, Pope,
Da Coach, and now we have Da Pope. And he took it, which I think is very cool for a guy of that stature to take these gifts from randoms. Like, a lot of the time they wouldn't even let you do that for security concerns or whatever the case might be. But I'm going to Rome at the end of August. I'm going on my honeymoon to Italy at the end of August. Do we have any score merch that I can try to give the Pope? I'll do it. I'll take it with me and I'll try to give the Pope, like, do we have like a Spiegel and Holmes shirt or a Mully and Haw hat or so, like a tote, Raheem and Harris tote, something, Cubs baseball, something, anything. Well, he's a Sox fan, so he probably wouldn't take that. if the bosses are listening, give me some merch. That'd be a great plug for the score. If I could get the Pope to take some score merch, I'll do it.
I think we got some mugs here that we can probably give you.
I'm shameless. I'll do it. I don't care. My thanks to Scott Baer of the Marquee Sports Network, covering the Bears for those fine folks over there, and Sadhav Sharma, who covers the Cubs for The Athletic. If you missed either of those or anything on today's show, check it out, 670thescore.com or on the Odyssey app. Of course, thanks to all of you for listening and contributing to the show tonight, and thanks to Tyler Buterbaugh on the other side of the glass and for helping me put this whole thing together. Until next time, Rami Makhlouf saying thanks for listening to The Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And when I'm on sports talk radio, I learn that just keep talking, and that's helpful.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.